It's no secret that there are considerable challenges facing higher education right now. The teaching and learning methods of the past are becoming obsolete, and time-worn processes have all but lost their effectiveness. No longer will the take no action or move forward with incremental change mindsets sustain operations. Colleges are closing their doors at an alarming rate, and some are teetering on the edge of existence. It's time to join the Alliance, the Alliance for Innovation and Transformation, better known as AFIT. Check them out at afithighered.com. That's A-F-I-T, highered.com. If you want to be at the forefront of technology and innovation in education, it's time to look at AFIT. Welcome back, everybody. It's your time to ed up on the Ed Up Experience podcast, where we make education your business. Dr. Joe Sallusto here with you again in another episode. And generally, I do talk to myself or do these, you know, go to our website and blah, 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 blah. But I'm not going to do that today because I have a great guest and I want to give her as much time on the microphone as I possibly can. So we're going to get right to it because she has a great message that you will not want to miss. No pressure, of course, to her now to deliver on that. Here she is, ladies and gentlemen. Her name is Jen Lim, and she's CEO of Delivering Happiness. Jen, how are you?
Doing well, Joe. Thanks for having me.
Standing ovation right from the get-go.
Love it.
So talk to us about Delivering Happiness. This is a company that you co-founded, and you know, what is it, and why is this company and initiative of happiness so important right now?
Yeah, totally. So yeah, we started about 11 years ago in 2010. I had launched a book with the late CEO of Zappos, Tony Hsieh, and it was a Delivering Happiness book. That's what it was called. And we just thought it was going to be one of those things that we're going to do, check off on the list of things to do. But lo and behold, it was on the New York Times bestseller list for 26 weeks. And we were translated in 20 something odd languages. And so we just realized that there was a demand for happiness in the world, and specifically for us in the workplace and how that integrates with life. So from then, created the company, and essentially we call ourselves Coach Sultans, not Consultants, because we can't tell anyone when how to be happy or how to live their culture. So essentially helping organizations figure out what does it mean to create a sustainable culture based on the science of happiness. And since then, we've been around the world in governments, hospitals, schools, as we are here, nonprofit, for-profit, that kind of thing. And it's been really amazing to see what can actually be done when you base science on, I'm sorry, happiness on the science of, and then therefore have consistent techniques and practical ways to instill it and embed it in organizational systemic ways so that it actually sustains over time.
Yeah, you know, and I wonder how much more important your message is post coronavirus, right? Because you think about all the disruption that happened. What is happiness to us? Is it work from home? Is it work from, you know, is it a ping pong table? There's organizations out there that go, oh, our employees are happy. We've got a snack bar for them. And they just come in and they make free coffee and have snacks and they play ping pong. And therefore, we're going to have greater production. You're talking about the science of happiness, and there's a psychological component. How did your message manifest itself or evolve because of coronavirus, or did it stay the same but just become more focused?
Yeah, I mean, I think bottom line is just got so more hyper elevated in terms of what is even like, what does happiness even mean to us anymore? I've been talking from CEOs to frontliners to students that have really fundamentally asked that question, because with all that happened in the last couple of years, it has been in some ways with the silver lining, knowing that there's been terrible losses, traumas, et cetera. But we've also been given the gift of time to actually reflect on some of the questions that we've kind of been pushing on to the back burner for so long of what does true fundamental happiness really mean? And to your point, I think we learned back in the dot-com days that, yeah, it's not the foosball tables, it's not the free Red Bull. Those are all perks, but those are very extrinsic, even more pay to a certain extent can only go so far, because does it really touch upon the intrinsic stuff that matters to us most? And with the great resignation, the great reset, the great whatever you want to call it, people have seen, yeah, it's not only about the stuff about having more flexibility or again, more pay, but it's actually about meaning and tapping back into that sense of why am I doing what I'm doing? Why am I spending these precious moments prioritized this way? So I think that's why this whole question of what does actually happiness mean is more subjective than ever, but more important than ever, because we do have all an opportunity to help define it for ourselves more than ever.
Yeah. And I, you know, you brought up the great resignation, and oh my gosh, it's happening. It's happening with higher education. It's happening as a, you know, as we all look internally and go, okay, I spent the last couple of years, I was locked in my house and I had family that got sick, and whenever coronavirus caused all these problems, and then people are going, okay, wait a minute, what am I supposed to do with my life now? Am I happy? Am I truly happy? And is that, do you think that the question, the self-reflection of happiness is an antecedent that's creating these resignations or somebody else maybe great resignation is one way to say it, but then it's like the great restructuring or the great reimagining of what my life needs to be like in the future to give myself more meaning. Do you think happiness is, I mean, it's like a good thing. It's a good catalyst. Do you think it's part of that reimagining?
I do think so. And I say that with a caveat, because I don't want to appear to be biased just because I come from a company called Delivering Happiness and co-founded. Yes, of course, I think it's important. But is it the end all? No, I don't. And I think that's a big reason why I wrote this latest book that was launched October of last year called Beyond Happiness. Because I think for the last 10, 11 years of doing this, I've seen the benefits of what happiness can mean. Like if we have a sense of progress at work, if we are connected meaningfully with, you know, other coworkers, if we have a sense of autonomy or control, and ultimately a sense of purpose, these are all scientific tenets of happiness that we've seen work through and through. But to your question, and to make it more timely as to where we are now, there's more to it than that. And that's why Beyond Happiness was such a, you know, in hindsight, who knew it was going to be timely in this way? Because it's not all just, you know, rainbows and unicorns. There is the other side of us that I think is important to be aware about, self-aware about. It's not just our highs in our life. It's also our lows. You know, it's not just our strengths. It's also our shadow sides that I think this has given a real reset in being able to explore those things in ways that are more meaningful. And so then when I say beyond happiness, it's really happiness and. And for me, it's about humanity. And I know that's a big word, you know, it's existed since the existence of us being here on Earth. But I think what's most important, it's kind of spotlighted in the last couple of years, is that how do we treat each other as human beings, whether we're at work or in life? And most importantly, how does it start with ourselves? And that's where I think the elements of happiness and what's beyond, because it's really about fulfillment, really about being whole, showing up as our whole person, not just our rainbows and unicorns.
I for one like rainbows and unicorns, but it's not reality for some of us, right?
I love them too.
Yeah. So talk about the whole person and what that means to you. And then talk about, if you could, or just connect it beyond happiness. You talked about connectedness being it's kind of a key resonant topic. How do those things work together? The whole person, connectedness, and what comes beyond happiness?
Yeah, I think the wholeness part comes from doing a deep dive within ourselves and really understanding how we are multifaceted, multi-layered people, multi-layered individuals that just really want to show up authentically in life, especially at work. And that's actually one of the tenets of happiness, is it goes back way to the days of Aristotle and Socrates, of really understanding it's not just, you know, having that meaning, it's actually feeling that you can be authentically you when you, you know, show up in class, when you show up to the job, when you're a CEO, all those things. So that's why we really want to push the practical sides of what wholeness means. So as an example, Simone Biles, like her workplace happened to be on an international stage as a gymnast in the Olympics, and she made a stand. And did she have fans? Yeah. Did she have haters? She did. But what she did was just most important for herself. But then what did she do after that? She didn't go, you know, back in the locker room, back to her hotel. She hung around and supported her, you know, her teams. She supported the actual competitors from Russia. And she uplifted everyone from that by being herself, by making her choice. And that's being whole, because that's probably one of the hardest decisions you would have to say she ever made in her life. She was, you know, training for that one moment, but she did it because she knew that's what she needed to do. So that's when I bring wholeness into our workplace. Just imagine if we can have more whole conversations with ourselves and the people we work with. So it's not just about our skills and our, you know, roles and responsibilities. It's actually about our mental space, our emotional space, our physical space, our financial state, and of course, our meaningful or purposeful state, or some say spiritual state. So if you think about it, like if you imagine like a pie and all of these individual things are pieces of the pie, that's what creates a more holistic representation of who we are as human beings. And if everyone was able to be able to live up to that authentically in everyday life, I think that's what a big part of this great resignation or reset is about. It's being able to show up in that way and create these environments where there's psychological safety, where we can embrace that for each other.
You know, this is not like pre-planned, but I did a post recently on LinkedIn where I said something I'll read it to you. I said, because I'm happy in my job. I made a job change recently to Lindenwood University. I'm the senior vice president of Lindenwood Global. I've got this new gig. I'm so happy about it. I'm moving my family out to St. Louis from California. Awesome. And I said that happy people increases production. And I said something like job happiness is critical and directly correlated to overall production. Not that I ever doubted it, but coming into a role of fresh eyes, it made me realize you have to invest in your people to ensure they feel valued and check on them. And then of course I got like all these comments coming in where, you know, somebody says happy, the term happy is a problem. This guy says, I'm not ever happy to be at work. I don't need social aspects of work to be happy. And I'm happiest when I'm not working. For me, it's safety. And then I got another person that says, I'm not going to use the term happy. I would rather use satisfied or fulfilled. I got another person that says it's not happiness. It should be joy. And it's like, I got all these negative comments about a happy post. And I went, okay, what's this all about? And for me, happiness is like the umbrella. And then you can kind of chop it up. How do you respond to something like that? Is it the happiness and increased production at work, but it's not happy, it's joy. And I shouldn't have to be happy at work to be happy. And it's like, it's very confusing when I was trying to just be like, be excited about my post, you know?
Right. I think that's I think it's a beautiful point, because part of it is that, you know, some people just, like I said, I can't twist anyone's arm to be happy, nor is it any other job or role for anyone to do that. So I think that's the whole point of it, though, is because part of happiness is being able to define it for yourselves. So in that vein, if you want to call it joy, call it joy. You know, if you want to call it well-being, go for it. You want to call it anything, you know, go back to the, you know, rainbows and unicorns, you know, more power to you. But that's, I think, what's the most important thing, is that authenticity, autonomy comes from the fact that we as individual human beings should be able to have that space to identify what it really means intrinsically for ourselves. So it all leads to a very similar journey of having a higher purpose. And I just so happen to call it happiness. Some people might call it spirituality. Some people might call it joy, but I don't want to like kind of get into the weeds of semantics. I want to get to the purpose of who we are. Yeah. It's like, you know, what are we here for, and how can we connect without just, you know, battling what words we use for it.
So we're looking at now so many companies saying return to the office. We need all of our employees back. Some companies are saying we'll embrace this new structure and it's the future of work. What do you say to organizations about flexibility, or maybe to those that aren't being flexible, and how that has an impact now on employees? Because in higher education, I will tell you, in an industry where many, many, many schools are on ground and kids come on ground or coming back on ground, and then you just go, well, we have to be here on ground to service our students. But you wonder what could be created in the future to accomplish both of those goals. What do you say for any organization that's facing these issues about flexibility and workplace return?
Mm-hmm. I would say that if knowing that this is such a hot topic and there are going to be employees or going to be students that will choose one way or another, whether it's your school or another employer, based on these very important things, highest priority things since the last 10, 20 years. So having that in mind while you're designing how you want to do your program, if it's hybrid, if it's remote, all remote or whatever, having that in mind is so important, because you're drawing a line in the sand. Because if you have these amazing students, amazing candidates that do want that flexibility, and you're saying, sorry, no, then you know where they're going to go. And that's your choice, but you made that choice, so you can live with it. But I also want to say that because it's so difficult and challenging to cater to every single person, everyone's going to have an opinion. All we can do is really have, you know, have our listening skills on, be attentive and hearing where they're coming from and their situation. But at the end of the day, we all have to make choices. And so for like a CEO or for, you know, an admin, executive admin for executive for higher education, I would say whatever you choose, after actively listening to what people are saying, tell them the why. Once they hear the why, then they're more feel that at least they're more informed of what they want to do, but they also feel respected because they feel, oh, I was heard. And although this is not going my way, at least I know he or she made this decision for these reasons. It makes the biggest difference in having that open communication and transparency.
And I think that's where leaders show their authenticity, right? So you look at how, you know, and one of the things I always say for myself as a leader is self-awareness is so important as a leader, and you wonder how your approach affects other people's happiness, right? So we could have people who say, yes, I'm happy in my job. And then you could have a leader that is really not a good leader that affects your overall happiness. Mm. How do you advise organizations on the leadership components of how others can affect happiness of others, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does make sense. And I think, again, silver lining of all that's happened in the last few years is that there's been also a line in the sand of the leaders that choose to show up as not only as authentic, but as vulnerable as they can. And it's amazing to see like these conversations I've been having when the light bulb goes off of the leader that says, oh, that's true. Like I actually have to show up and share why this is a hard decision for me, or why this is like, I'm in a really challenging place in my own life and with my own family or my own career decisions. And it's not fallible. Like people these days, especially, they can, you know, if you don't walk the talk, they'll smell it a mile away. And more across every generation, this is not just Gen Zers or millennials, every generation are realizing this as well. So I think from a leadership standpoint, just remember, if we're trying to help others, if we're not being real with ourselves, and this is something I talk about in the book Beyond Happiness, if we're not nurturing our own greenhouse, our own needs, we can do whatever we want to try and grow others, but it will be stunted because we're not growing ourselves and taking care of ourselves. So as most enabled and powerful leaders is to remember that nurturing in the greenhouse first for yourself, then you have like amazing capacity to grow others as well.
So what do we do now? I mean, we're in a situation where we're reimagining what the future looks like. There is a true battle for talent out there, right? Like there's, mm-hmm. because of this great resignation, and I've had a lot of business leaders come on, whether it's higher education, outside of higher education, and they say, we cannot find good people. And when we do find them, we need to figure out how to keep them. We need to figure out how to make our employees happy. Mm-hmm. That whole pipeline of recruiting and retention, there's a more focus being put on that now than I think ever before on where are these great employees, and if what do we need to do and put in place to keep our people? You must be having that advice go out to companies, like, you know, if you find somebody good, you got to keep them. What does that planning look like for organizations as we move forward?
I love the things that the role and the job of what I have is because we've been able to see, using the science, the progress of what this whole notion is all about. Like talking about retention, talking about attracting the right people, those questions have been here since before COVID, right? Or BC, as I call it. So now that we're in AC, what does it mean? And it just means that it's like 10x more important to be focusing on those things and prioritizing those things. And I'll tell you, like, it's not easy in terms of implementing and making it happen sustainably, but it is very simple. And being able to reframe that this is like such a dire situation that we're losing people, resignations left and right, is actually reframing it. This is an opportunity. And for those that actually see it as opportunity, is being able to come to the table, come to with communication, come to with a brand that says, we actually, this organization cares in these ways. We are actually purposes driven in these ways. We're actually very focused on culture and making sure you're happy in these ways. Because again, if it's just lip service, people will know right away. And then the whistleblowers around the world, right, are happening all the time. But if leadership can actually be honest and authentic about this is how we're different because we're here for you as a person in growth, not just as a student, not just as an employee, as a whole human being. And these are the ways we're going to do it. We're not going to be successful in everything, but we're in this journey together. Just having those kind of like sentiment changes the whole direction of a ship that's being sailed already. And that becomes a differentiator. That's why I think it's a huge opportunity for those organizations that get it to differentiate them from others that don't.
You know, I could talk to you forever because I think this is so, it's so important. As a leader, as somebody who leads others, I'm going, okay, what am I doing to contribute to this? And are my employees happy? And what will make them happy? And that can be subjective, like we talked about. Happiness can be this subjective thing, and everybody's got a different definition. But what you're talking about and what you've said is it's not just a theoretical framework. It's a science-based approach where you're saying, this is what happiness means. Mm-hmm. What is the science telling us about happiness in the workplace?
Yeah. So I think I kind of mentioned this a little earlier that there's a few things, levers that we call it, that have withstood the last 10, 20 years of research in the science of happiness, that if we instill those things within our organizations and teams. So going again, just a quick repeat, a sense of autonomy, a sense of progress, a sense of connection, meaningfully, and a sense of higher purpose is that last one. What we've seen with the science is that this four levers, if you use this, you can take it and really apply it to any situation that you have with that's current in your team, current in your organization. And how do we know? It's like basically take a snapshot, ask your people what's going well right now, what's not going well, celebrate those highs. Like, yes, we've gone this, we've done this. Like, this is amazing. We've done it in a really hard time. What are those lows? What are those challenges? And I can guarantee that with those four levers, you can apply it to those challenges and then you can measure the progress. And that's where the science comes in, because without, you can have stories till kingdom come, but without the stats to prove it, there will always be naysayers that say, I don't want those rainbows and unicorns. And then say, oh, well, actually it's more than that. It's about this. And when you see the retention go up, when you see you're attracting better students, better employees, then there's no Sarah that would say, stop being happy or whatever word you want to use.
Amazing.
I love that. So you're serving as a learning partner for the Alliance for Innovation and Transformation, and you just wrapped up the CEO Forum and Reps meeting in Nashville. What are the challenges or a couple of challenges off the top of your head that you've heard from college presidents who make up the AFIT's membership? Mm-hmm. And of course, I want to just mention that you're going to be at the Summer Institute for AFIT, July 20th through 23rd in Nashville, to help community colleges and companies who are serving higher ed learn how to build better human organizations that are happy. But what are a couple of challenges that you heard outside of that CEO forum and reps meeting?
Yeah, I would say there was a lot of specific challenges, but the overarching one that crossed all the executives, I would say would be the acknowledgement that we have to do things way different, but we don't know how in this new abnorm. And so it's kind of like they wanted to take on that challenge, but at the same time, it was so daunting and mind-boggling because there are so many things to go about doing it. And so the more specific ones would be, you know, how do we get buy-in across the organization, knowing that there's so many different layers now, so not huge. Just, you know, right, like from a level of hierarchy to faculty versus, you know, students, that kind of thing. So that was a big one. Diversity inclusion was a big one. And I think the biggest thing about re-engagement after a huge burnout, and also re-engagement based on why is it important to go to school again? For both sides, students and faculty, why is it that like after a few years, like a lot of students, like I'm making decent money. I don't really have to go down that route anymore. It's like, okay, well, let's revisit that. So I think these are like huge questions that they're swimming in their head, but it's really exciting to see how excited they are to tackle it. Like they're so ready to take on this new abnorm.
Well, if you are a higher ed administrator out there swimming in your head, one thing you can do is you can contact Jen Lim. She, of course, is the CEO of Delivering Happiness, also the chief happiness officer, which, of course, you have to be. If you're delivering happiness, you got to be the chief happiness officer. Jen, it was a pleasure to have you on the EdUp Experience today. I would encourage everybody to head to afithighered.com. You can read Jen's profile. I also would encourage you, I would guess you can get it on Amazon, Beyond Happiness. Check it out. We'll put that link in the show notes. Jen, any last words for our higher ed group?
Oh, wow. I think I would go back to what I mentioned. I mean, again, this seems like such a daunting task. And I really wanted to express in the book and everything that I do that it doesn't have to be. And if there's one thing to remember, like the whole greenhouse metaphor that I talk about, it's like, how do we want to spend our time and make sure from the time we wake up to the time we go to sleep, those moments were not happy necessarily, but at least they were full and meaningful because we were living true to ourselves.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just EdUpped. The Alliance for Innovation and Transformation is an alliance of pacesetters, forward-thinking higher education CEOs committed to leading by example to show other higher education institutions how to innovate and transform their organizations in the face of unprecedented challenge and change. They offer learning, development, and networking opportunities focused on customer-driven value, innovation, transformation skills, and techniques, and approaches to help colleges and other organizations achieve the long-term sustainability necessary for their survival. AFITHigherEd.com is where you can check them out. AFITHigherEd.com.